Mr. Cyril Sherwood, Reel 1. Can you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Sherwood?
Yes, I was born 31st of July 1920 in Stepney in London.
Could you tell me a bit about your family background?
Yes. My grandparents came from what is now Belarus, now it's in Russia. It was then on the border of Poland and Russia. They came when my father was still very, very young. They settled in East London. The family basically worked in grocery shops, which was the normal procedure for immigrant families. They were a very close-knit family, very close-knit, quite large, right, number of children and all that, lived within walking distance of each other, and were very close together. My father, I remember, was quite a powerful person. He was strong physically and mentally, and although he wasn't the oldest in the family, somehow he seemed to be the one where there were problems. They came to him to set us up. So I grew up having quite a bit of respect for my father. There were times when we had difference of opinion, and involved in one occasion when I actually left home. But I've never lost any respect for him. My mother, mother's interest centered entirely around the family. She would be at home, she didn't want to travel a great deal, just waiting for children to come visit. I was one of seven children, five boys, two girls, girls either side. I was the youngest of the boys, and I understand that there was an older sister who died when she was very young. My mother particularly wanted another daughter. She tried, a boy came along, tried again, another boy came along, and then tried again, and I came along. And the story is that when I was born, she didn't want to have anything to do with me, and I say that must explain all my psychological hang-ups. I got any. I think that's all apocryphal, but it's not so. We were also a very close-knit family, lots of disputes, lots of arguments, and the brothers, mixture of people. Some of the children got involved into trouble, my one older brother, the oldest boy, was very ill when he was young, when he was about one or two. He recovered, and incidentally, because of that, he was given an extra name. It's customary, I think, that when somebody really died, survived, was given an extra name. So he was born David, but then he was given the name Moss as well, and we knew him as Moss. He was a very wayward fellow. Charming, socially, people, fantastic. He spoke to other people, they said, what a wonderful fellow he was. We knew that he caused a lot of problems in the family, particularly for my father. But my mother couldn't do enough of him. Usual story. My oldest sister was, in effect, a bridge between the previous generation and the new generation. My father, I always considered it was remarkable because he was born on a farm, lived the first few years on a farm, riding bareback on horse and so on, and they would get up early in the morning, go out, break the ice on the wells of drinking water and so on. Pretty hard existence. When he came to England, my father said he was quite young, he went to a local school. Not too long, but I think it was beyond that age. But what was amazing was that he integrated himself so well into English culture. He started out working in a grocery shop, but he wanted to study. And the story is, and I think it's true, because the hours in the grocery shop were terribly long, from 6 in the morning to about midnight, just for Saturday, shut up Saturday, they didn't work, but otherwise it was non-stop. And he wanted to study, but didn't have time. Then he was walking along the street, and he saw a fellow outside his shop, a butcher shop, just reading a newspaper about 11 o'clock in the morning. And he said, well, how do you manage to do this? He said, well, I've already finished the day's work. How's that? He explained, and he got up in the morning, people came in early in the morning, he'd go to the market at 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, and by midday or so, it finished. And I thought, well, that's a wonderful idea. Then I had the rest of the day to study. And so he went into that business as well. and he studied, he worked hard, and then he was quite competent. Competent because he developed several businesses, not modern to the multi-millionaire level, but quite substantial, quite good, variety of them. And as I said, he managed to integrate himself. I used to notice when he was talking to other, quote, English people, because they're all English, but you know, they didn't know where it was distinguished. And he talked on even terms, and they spoke on even terms with him, even though the language was, of course, an adopted language. But he did very, very well, very successfully that way. As he got older, of course, he used to revert, and sometimes admit if he was counting up things, he'd be counting in Yiddish, even though normally, of course, English was the language he spoke. My older sister learned Yiddish, and that was often spoken at home, but by the time half the children had been born, the language changed English, and English was the language that I was brought up in. I heard Yiddish sometimes when my parents were talking to relations, it would be in Yiddish, so I'd pick up some odd phrases, but that's not all. My mother's family were quite different. We called them the Hampshire branch of the family, because when her family came over, they settled in Hampshire, and again, they integrated quite well, and in fact, one of them became the mayor of Portsmouth, and another one became the chairman of the bench in Petersfield in Hampshire. And they always, that branch always considered themselves a cut above the rest of the family, my father's family, and I think that's part true from a cultural point of view. They were. But they were rather weaker set of people, not as successful in their business or work or whatever, but they were different sets.
So the family was relatively well off, but when you.
Relatively, yes. By the time I'd say I was born, 1920, my father, my family already were living comparatively comfortably. The house we lived in at that age until I was about 10 was one of those in the East End where three, four people sleeping in the same room, an outside loo, and that sort of thing. Also, where the butcher part disappeared quite quickly, and he went into smoking salmon. And he was one of the first salmon smokers in London. Famous for that. And that was on the same premises. They had the smoke ovens and all that, where we were living and all that. And there was only one loo outside, which was shared with the people who were working there. It was pretty hard, but we didn't know. It was just normal. That's how we lived. Then we moved when I was about 10.
What about your education? What was your first school?
I went to an elementary school, a place called Swan Street, which was just within the city boundary. So the very things relating to the city we experienced. For example, on what was then Empire Day, May the 24th, in our Commonwealth Day, although I don't think it's really observed to an extent, we used to go to the Guildhall. The mayor would give us a talk, and also a box of chocolates each, I remember. And also I remember how a trick question, and he did it very well. He said to the children, and must have been a thousand of us, you are sure you all know your Bible, who killed Cain? And everybody yelled out, of course, Abel. There was a pause. We realised it was Abel who killed Cain. But and I remember that ever since, how vividly he did it, how carefully he did it, very, very successful. School, I have no idea what it was like educationally. I have no recollection, except in the afternoon we used to sleep on mattresses. But by the time I was 9 or 10, we'd moved to Hackney, King Edward's Road. It was a very large house. There was a section in King Edward's Road which now disappeared, apartment block, which was quite a period. And I remember I went up the steps to it, two very large rooms going all the way through. One of them was called the drawing room, had a beautiful paintings on the wall, wonderful plaster work all the way around, and a very large garden. I'd never seen things like that before, and also I remember commenting to the teacher that there was a holly bush. I'd never seen a holly bush at Christmas, and she was really, and I was very proud that the house was going to have holly trees. The life, then of course I started to become aware of the things I was taking again. I went to a school called Parmiter's Foundation, which was actually between Hackney and Bethnal Green. It was founded by Thomas Parmiter, about 100 years previous to that, as a foundation equivalent of a grammar school.
What type of a school was it?
Well, a boys' school. Grammar. It had children from about 10 to, well, it depends where they stayed, to do higher schools, which would be about 18 or 19, I think. It was quite respectful. Some of the teachers wore gowns and mortarboards. Quite a good level of education. Of course, I wasn't really in a position to gauge how good it was, but my memory was I think we learned quite a lot. I recall quite a lot about the school, about the individual teachers, good or bad. I remember particularly with sports. I was quite interested in sports. I was probably the only one in the family who was really keen on football and taking part in athletics and gymnastics and so on. I used to like that immensely. Some of the teachers, Huge, for example, he'd written school songs. Some of our school songs were the same with Harrow's school songs. And in fact, as I mentioned previously when we were talking, that the friends that I've been most involved with all my life were ones I was at school with. And whenever we meet up somehow at a gathering, not necessarily for different parts of the room, Palmer's boys would come and we'd spend time singing some 40 years on and all that, and Thomas, Bravo, Tom, all that. And we remembered the songs and it was very, very pleasant. Sports, did quite a bit of sports, and football and so on. Most children left after what was then the trip, equivalent of general schools, I suppose.
How about your own academic progress? Did you have a particular bent?
I had a problem, because my brother, Emilio, above me, was very good. He became a doctor. He's dead now. He became a doctor. He was very good at studies. And I used to follow him up to his class, and of course the teacher would say, well, we expect you to do the same with your brother. No person couldn't be condemned more. But nevertheless, I did reasonably, but by comparison, not that well, although strangely enough, it all seems that way, although because I followed on to the following academic qualifications. Remember, not before taking CLIC, my mother said, it's a terrible thing for her to say, but I've not thought it held it against her. She said, well, don't tell too many people that you're taking this exam, but if you fail, it won't be so bad. And I remember thinking that I haven't got much confidence in me, but it was by comparison with the. She remedied it because on a later occasion, when there was something or other, and my mother said to me, I'm sure you can do it because you're brighter than Archie. That was my brother. Because I think our abilities were rather different. He was academically that much better. I was sort of socially and more adept and so on. That social thing was a question because the family children were divided, really. There was the older set and the younger set, and you don't get together. My younger sister, who's still alive, I and my brother Archie were more or less a trio, but I was the one who was most involved socially. I had lots of friends. We used to go out an awful lot, and as we got to late teens, a lot of girlfriends as well. And we used to go out to parties, dances, and all this was in the mid-late 30s. And my mother used to say, why don't you take Archie with you? Because he didn't bother with friends. He used to play the piano. He taught himself to play the piano. He played very well because he had to spend a year before going to medical school and training in Cardiff. And he used that year to learn to play the piano, cello. It was very, his knowledge of music and the theory of music was fantastic. And later years, when be with, say, professional musicians, and they'd be discussing with him, amazed how they were listening to him carefully because of the way he was describing various mathematics. He was very good in science and mathematics, but socially, he more or less kept himself to himself.
What about, how did you do at the matric?
I got through all right, moderately. I don't know the precise thing, but I did get through. And I went to university. I actually quite young, I think. I must have been late 16, 1930. I went to university in 37. So I would have been 17 when I first went there, but the first interviews and all that was in my matric was when I was 16, and I think by today's standards, I was considered fairly young.
Now, what were you studying and where at?
I studied law at King's College, London. But, don't worry about that, because I always wanted to be an engineer.
How come law then?
My father was and he, when looking back, he really played tricks with me. He manipulated me quite well. He was a Jewish family, particularly medicine, law, I think most immigrant families. I heard on the radio the other day an immigrant family talking about that, an Indian family, saying that their parents of both wanted to take up law or medicine, that sort of thing. I wanted to be an engineer, and in fact, at the same time as I was getting papers and applying to King's College, I was getting admission papers and contact from the Imperial College of Science and Technology. And I wrote to my father what I wanted to do this, and he said, well, wait a minute, tell me what you do. Start with law. Because in those days you had the intermediate 3-year course, the year intermediate exam, and then the final about another 2 years. And he said, well, do it for the first year, see how it goes. And if it doesn't go well, you don't like it, then you go off to engineering then. Okay, then that's what I think. And I started that. Of course, when the intermediate came along, I got through those. My father said, well, when you've gone this far, why not just finish? Of course, you've got the degree, you have a degree in law, and then if you want to do, you're off and do engineering. That sort of thing. So, okay, Daddy. I remember I was only 17, 18, and my father was a very strong-willed person. But then again, of course, the war intervened, and I was just 19.
Now, had you had any awareness of what was going on in Nazi Germany, both politically and the huge rise of anti-Semitism in Germany?
It's a very good question, and it's something I've often thought back and discussed it with other friends. By and large, we knew, but we didn't really know. We had ideas, we knew that some things were going on, because after all, the Spanish Civil War, 36, 37, we heard, oh, so-and-so's older brother had gone off in the International Brigade. Oh yes, and then basically we were, like I said, left-wing, in the sense that we were politically minded. We were left wing. We knew about the unfairness of the system, the poverty in which people were living, and the disparity between the people, most of the people we knew. Not me personally, because comparatively speaking, I was comfortable. And I was already finished starting to study, so I had prospects. But I was aware that it was all unfair.
Had you actually joined a political party?
No. I've never really joined any political party. Somehow, I again thought back on that, and I think the reason is that I can't just subscribe to whatever particular party proposes, because there are aspects that I can't agree with that. Overall, yes, I agree. I've never voted Conservative in my life. I've at first, when I was in the army, and actually I was reading through the what I've written about the...
I think best to keep it to 1930s, really.
Okay.
So you were at the time of a general socialist perspective without being a member of any of the parties.
Yes.
Did you... What about Nazi Germany? I mean...
Yes, I was aware, because I remember one day my father came back with a young lady of 16 or 17. I didn't quite know what it was about, but she was a Hungarian refugee. There were already problems with them, and she was in Germany, and she was one of the people who managed to get out and needed sponsors, and my father had sponsored her and brought her home and then set her up. In fact, we've kept vague contact ever since, and she lived, as far as I can tell, a contented life. What would have happened to her if she stayed behind? Or not. Now, I was aware of rise of Nazism, but it was almost one removed. It didn't have direct... I used to go to Bethnal Green, 55 evenings, I think, where mostly, and the fascists would meet us, and I'd stand there and listen to them, and all that amazing, and there was the... I don't know if you know about that, in the, at the corner of Bethnal Green, and Clacton Grove, on one side, there were the fascists, the next to the other side, the Communist Party had meeting, and the police were in between. I don't recall actual fights taking place, but there was always tension. And I used to go there and used to listen, and I was amazed at things that were being said. What was all this about?
Would you heckle? I mean, was it?
No, I never heckled. I think once or twice I asked. A question or something, but I never had. Remember, I was 16 and 17. I was reasonable size, but I wasn't fit to keep my mouth shut.
Was there any aggression directed at you from the crowd? Were you obviously Jewish in your?
I wasn't. I think that was something. I don't know, but I never, when I was in a crowd like that, I never had anybody pointing out to me, "Oh, you're Jew. Why didn't you work this or that?" That never happened. I don't know, maybe the appearance or whatever it is, I wasn't a stereotype to you. And actually, practically never in my life to France have I had much anti-Semitism directed at me.
I'll come back to did Mosley... What sort of topic was he covering in the speeches?
Cause all about the international Jewish finance and all the problems. I can't remember precisely where to use, but basically saying that all their problems were caused by the Jews. It wasn't just Jews, it was also the communists and Bolsheviks. So remember, this was mid-30s, Russia, Bolshevism, communism was a thing. In fact, one of my brothers, the big one, Joss, my older sister had given us nicknames, and his nickname was Bolshevik. And we've sometimes wondered why, probably because he was a bit of a rebel, and probably at that time, he was born 1917, so he would be brought up just in time with the Russian Bolsheviks, of course, and revolutionaries and rebels, but he was given the nickname of Bolshevik. But with the crowds, I have vivid memories of my being there, and I kind of visualize it, and people all around giving a Nazi salute, a chap on the rostrum, a couple of them hanging the audience, Union Jacks and all that. And sometimes I'd wander over to the Communist Party where they were talking and listening to them. But I must confess, I found fashion way more interesting because I had more direct involvement somehow. I knew I was at the receiving end of it. And that perhaps has been a characteristic of my life. I've always been more interested in hearing the other side. I told you I'd explain why we were internet, why I enjoy reading the Arab newspapers about the Middle East situation, and there's more than Israel still, by the way. At that time, and at school, yes, primary school, quite good, but in the morning we had assemblies, but the Jewish boys had separate assemblies from the Christians, who were the majority, and we were the main hall. We weren't on the classrooms, but we finished earlier. And I went also with one of the teachers when he came along, because one of the teachers took charge and would read a lesson, and one of them would always put his gown and mortarboard on. And you know, we could wear some sort of weapon, so we must have worn our caps, school caps, during it. And I remember one time, nice of him to put a hat on, because the other teacher didn't.
What about anti-Semitism? Perhaps to talk now a bit about how you didn't seem to experience
very
it.
Very little. I remember one occasion, following on that, we used to wait outside the main hall for the Christian boys to finish the assembly. If the headmaster had to make some announcements, we would troop in and stand at the back, behind the rest. But if not, they would come out and we'd form through. They'd come out singly and we'd link up and go back to our classrooms. And I remember one occasion the chap who was next to me, Christopher, said, "You're really heathens, aren't you?" I thought, "Hmm?" And that threw me a little, you know, and I wasn't aware, but I thought, how can we move these? I was aware sufficiently about the relationship with Judaism and developing with Christianity and so on, and I thought, remember at the time, I wasn't madly theologically knowledgeable, but nevertheless, I thought, am I a heathen? Well, anyway, that stuck in my mind. I remember also being in a fight with a boy. I can't remember exactly, but I imagine it was because my sister's coming along. Like a Jew boy or something of that sort. And I was in a physical fight and my older brother had to come and separate us. Otherwise, I cannot recall being at the receiving end of anything anti-Semitic. I may be in denial. It may be that it happened, I just pretend it wasn't so. But I do not recall any bad incident. Of course, most of my friends were Jewish. A school looks weird there for mixture, but outside of school, they're all Jewish because we used to go to Hebrew classes, so there was a tendency to keep together.